You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Conflict in Cabo Delgado, the northern region of Mozambique, has escalated in recent months. The conflict has been fought between Islamic State-affiliated militant groups and Mozambican security forces. Since it began in October 2017, over 800,000 people have been displaced, including over 300,000 children, and a further 5,000 people have died. But recently, fighting has worsened, resulting in foreign military involvement and French gas giant Total closing their $20 billion gas plant in the region. Louis was joined by independent journalist Neha Wadeka, who has spent time in Mozambique covering the conflict for the BBC and The Guardian. She began by briefly explaining what was happening in Cabo Delgado.
Yeah, so in 2017, a group of armed insurgents attacked a coastal city in the very northern province of Mozambique. The province is called Cabo Delgado. And that was the first attack in what has now become a four-year insurgency. And in the beginning, these kind of armed actors, little was known about who they were, what they wanted, who they were affiliated with. And as time has passed, they pledged their allegiance to the Islamic State. And then the Islamic State has now claimed credit for the attacks that this group is perpetrating. And so these armed insurgents, many of them are local, although there are reports that there are members who are also from countries like Tanzania, which is Mozambique's neighbor to the north, as well as people say foreigners. And this group kind of goes from village to village. They burn down houses. They abduct women and children to use either as sex slaves or as fighters. And they also have been beheading villagers using machetes and other kind of horrible acts of violence. And I would say the most significant attack happened this year in March in the town of Palma, which is just, you know, close to the Tanzanian border. And what happened during this attack, it was a four-day siege, or even more than a four-day siege, where the insurgents attacked this town, which is actually the site of a $20 billion natural gas project that's being run by the French energy giant Total. And so natural resources play a big part in this. The Cabo Delgado region is rich in natural gas, gold, rubies, timber, and other really precious resources. And so from the reporting that I've done with colleagues, we've investigated the role that these natural resources and the battle over these natural resources is also playing in this insurgency.
Yeah, because you mentioned the insurgency began around 2017. Was there any indication before that that there was beliefs like this and that this kind of thing was going to happen?
You know, since kind of 2010 onwards, there were reports circulating by local religious leaders in the region. They would tell people in Maputo and in the central government that, you know, we're worried about the youth in this region being radicalized. And that is kind of a trend that's happening along the East African coast. And so the concern was that people with radical beliefs, maybe people who had been educated either in Saudi Arabia or in other parts of the Gulf, or even in Sudan, they were bringing these ideas back to places like Kenya, Tanzania, and they were radicalizing locals there in a very extreme form of Islam. And so that was one of the concerns of the religious leaders in Mozambique. They said, you know, well, we're really worried that this kind of radicalization is happening. And because of the situation with natural resources and also the history of Cabo Delgado, it is a place that, you know, these radical beliefs could take hold. And the reason I say that is because this is one of the poorest regions in Mozambique. It has the poorest health, education, and employment indicators. It is really a region that has been overlooked by the central government, which is based in Maputo, over 1,000 kilometers south.
That's something I wanted to touch on, because you mentioned that the government kind of ignored people saying, like, look, there's people with these radical beliefs and they're going to radicalize youth. And then you mentioned the government overlooking. What role has the government played in this conflict?
Initially, the government was really slow to respond. So for the first couple of years of this conflict, the government actually didn't even admit that they had an issue. And so this was something that was almost being covered up. Eventually, the government really had to kind of acknowledge that there was something going on as hundreds of thousands of displaced people started moving south, either to Pemba, which is the capital city of Cabo Delgado, or north into Tanzania. And so once that became almost too explosive for the government to pretend nothing was happening, then of course they had to acknowledge the problem. Since then, the government brought in private military contractors, and that was their initial kind of physical or military response to this. They hired companies, first the Wagner Group from Russia, and then the Dick Advisory Group, which is based in South Africa. And they tried to bring these private military contractors in and hire them to deal with the problem. What ended up happening, though, was that these groups were not really prepared to fight this kind of insurgency. They were not making a lot of progress. And in the effort that they were making, they were also committing human rights abuses, which Amnesty International, the organization, documented, you know, extrajudicial killings and other kinds of abuses that these PMCs were committing. So the government now has accepted the help of external governments in dealing with this issue. So the United States has sent people to help train Mozambican forces. And then more recently, just last month, the government of Rwanda actually sent the first ground troop forces.
Because obviously Total has closed their gas plant in the region. And you mentioned that the port town's been taken over. What specific consequences are there of this?
I mean, everything. So Total was meant to come in, and that project was kind of held a lot of hopes and dreams. There was going to be development. There was going to be a lot of investment in the region. People were hoping and expecting to get jobs. And so all of that has been stopped. Right now, there's no, you know, there's no possibility of this project continuing in the current moment. And that means that all of the progress that people were hoping for in this very kind of remote, underdeveloped part of the country is now on hold. Other major gas companies that were looking at developing projects in the region have put those decisions on hold. Of course, in addition to that, there are almost a million people, 800,000 at last count, who have been displaced from their homes. And there are another 3,000 at least who have been killed. So the consequences for the people of this region are huge.
You mentioned the displacement, and one of the figures that stood out to me was the number of displaced children. I think as of August, figures said around 336,000 children have been displaced, and some NGOs have called that a children's crisis. Do you think there's enough being done from within the government and internationally?
This is a conflict that has been slow to get attention because of the slow nature of the way that this conflict built up, as well as the crises that are happening all around the rest of the world. What was happening in Mozambique was really kind of billed as a local problem. So people said, you know, these are local guys, it's a local insurgency, this is a problem for the government. And now to see the scale and scope of the problem really tells a different story. I think, you know, non-governmental organizations are doing as much as they can with the limited access that they have. But I do think that the government of Mozambique has been slow to issue, let's say, humanitarian visas, has been slow to try to provide access to humanitarians who are trying to reach the north, which is where the issue really is. The southern part of Cabo Delgado has been relatively secure, which has allowed NGOs and charities to set up there as a base. But that requires people to actually come down from the north where the fighting is and reach those places. And so what would be really helpful is if these organizations were able to get up into the heart of what's going on and reach people much earlier. And the government of Mozambique has not made that easy for these organizations. And so I think there's a lot more that could be done to facilitate safe access. You know, there's also issues of kind of relocation.
So yeah, obviously there are NGOs operating in the region, albeit with difficulty. But do you think there may be need for foreign intervention beyond these NGOs?
Yeah, so I think that there are conversations going on between international governments, the European Union, the United States, with the government of Mozambique. And I think that I'm not privy to the content of those conversations, of course. My guess is that there is there are a lot of efforts being made for the government of Mozambique to deal with this as quickly as possible. And so I think that the things that are coming into place now with intervention from Rwanda and other countries in Southern Africa is very important. And I think that the training and the kind of support hopefully being provided by the United States and European Union governments will also play a big role in trying to get this under control.
And I guess you've broadly given an overview of what's happening, of the government role and everything that's impacting people. But are there any specific examples of people you've spoke to and things that have particularly stood out to you?
Oh, definitely. One of the stories that I heard just recently from a woman that I interviewed is, her name is Fatima, and she was in a town up north. And when the insurgents came, she fled. And she was only able to bring her two sons with her. And so her 10-year-old daughter was staying with her father and was lost. And no one has heard from her since. And so this colleague, this woman spoke to my colleague and I, and she traveled up to Tanzania where she tried to get refuge. And the Tanzanian government actually turned her away. And brought her back to Mozambique. And that is really against the principles of international agreements. People who are seeking refuge in other countries are meant to be given asylum or granted asylum. So being turned away at the border was traumatic for her and devastating. She really wanted to find safety. She then had to travel down to the south where I met her, and just hearing her talk about her daughter and the idea of not knowing where her daughter was or what had happened to her was just heartbreaking, and she's still looking, but I will tell you that now when she refers to her daughter, she talks about her in the past tense, and so I think in her mind she's almost already lost her. That's devastating. I also spoke to a young woman who is a young mother, recently married, and she was abducted by the insurgents. She was held for over a month. And she was repeatedly sexually assaulted by one of the insurgents with her daughter in the same tent. And it's stories like that that are just, they don't leave you. They're horrifying. And the type of violence and abuse that's being perpetrated is just horrific.
Yeah, because I think these stories, especially in New Zealand, I don't think it's something we hear about. From what I've seen, there's almost been no coverage of what's happening on national news. For people who don't know that this is going on, what's happening, is there anything in particular that you have to say?
Understandably, right now, with so many different tragedies and crises going on in the world, it's very hard to feel like you can keep up with everything and to not feel overwhelmed by the amount of need and the amount of grief. But being on the ground, meeting the people in Mozambique and hearing their stories, people are asking for help and for support. And so I think, the best thing to do is to try to raise awareness for people to share this information through their networks, to bring more and more scrutiny on this, because the more scrutiny is on this conflict, the more that governments and the government of Mozambique and nonprofit organizations will have to do to support the people of Cabo Delgado. And so I think that kind of awareness raising, making sure that people know what's going on, and, trying to provide as much support as possible is always helpful.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.